Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Unfiltered. I can't hear myself in the headphones, Jack, but I can still wing it.
On another set of headphones.
And this is our 99th episode. And we are... Hello. I am here. Well, we'll try it anyway. Anyway, this is our 99th episode, and I'm switching headphones here.
It's fine.
You got it? Thank you, Jack. Oh, here... Wow. Super loud now. My God. So can you hear me? Okay, sorry for the technical difficulty, everyone. This is excellent. So we're here, our 99th episode, and I'm in the studio live here at Roberta's, and I have the lovely and talented Miss Lucy, who's sat in many, many times. Let's say hello.
Hello.
So Aaron is... woefully absent, but she will make an incredible return on our 100th episode, which is next week. So be sure to listen in next week, which is ultimately probably a better show than today. But we will try our best today.
It will still be good, Brian.
Thank you. So it's one of these weird days. I mean, Roberta's is packed. There's like 100 people here having pizza. And
it's because it's good.
Yeah, it's because it's good. And I have a little industry news to share, and so when we get into it, and we're going to have later a little call-in from one of our favorite winemakers, Mr. Jason Carter at Barrel 27, and then Lucy's going to regale us at some point with her Valentine's Day dinner that she's going to prepare, which is I'm very, very jealous to hear what she's got up her sleeve. And then we're going to, of course, taste something here on air. But let's start in with a little news. And I've read here that the Wine Group Inc. Has signed a distribution agreement with Trapiche, which is a huge, huge conglomerate, the world's largest winery by volume. Apparently, I did not know that.
Wow.
Has entered into an agreement for U.S. distribution for Trapiche, which will begin April 1st, 2012. And so, basically, that means that they're consolidating. It says here they're strategically importing wine in this market, which will allow them to have two fantastic cultures, one of which I'm not sure what that means, but one of velocity of brands and one that is bringing the Argentine portfolio into the hands of someone that actually can sell it, they believe. So
they don't have anyone importing anything at this point.
They do. I mean, the brand has been in the country forever, but
They're just blowing out every other...
It sounds like just a piece of PR. I'm not really sure why we're reading it.
Okay.
So that's, you know, a big conglomerate, the world's largest producer of wine.
That's pretty...
Has signed a new deal.
That's a big claim.
Uh-huh. It is. There's some other news here, which is really not so relevant either. But...
you might share anyway.
I might share it. There's just the best of times, the worst of times. So apparently Robobank is saying that the beverage industry is doing, you know, quite well, but also quite poorly in some sectors. So the Food and Agro Business Research and Advisory Department provides an overview of the five key mega trends which shape the outlook of the beverage industry. Can you imagine what those trends are?
Please share.
Oh, my God. So they say that there's volatility. There's emerging market demand for wine. There's value, and there's also convergence and distribution. There's sustainable sourcing.
Yeah.
And then, so these are all good things.
Yeah,
so
they all make sense.
Except for the volatility.
Right, which is the number one on that list.
Right. So all I see from this article is that they're saying the currency, the weakening currency, and the inability of people to have consistency in not only monetary policy but also in crops, so they really can't, you know modern winemaking can only do so much. 2011 was not a great year for a lot of wineries across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So but other p- parts of the country and other parts of the globe are doing quite well. So I think South America should be looking pretty good, and some of Europe is not going to be looking so good for 2011 vintage. That's basically what it says. I've summed up about a 40-page thing in 40 seconds.
Well done.
All right. Well, this is it. This is all I want to talk about for the news.
All right.
What else is going on with you?
It's Valentine's Day, and I went shopping this morning. Typically what occurs on Valentine's Day is my husband and I go out the night before and have a lovely dinner, and then I go shopping for all of our friends, and all of our friends come over and eat dinner at our house. So we have about 6 people coming over tonight, and I've decided, I went to the store this morning, of course, Meat Hook, where I only buy my meat.
Where's
there
that?
Or that's Heritage.
Heritage.
Yeah. But it's a little more convenient living in Brooklyn to go there. And I decided on Cornish game hens.
Wow.
So I got 2 Cornish game hens.
And how big were they?
They were 3.5 pounds each.
That's not small.
No. So they're it's large birds, which this is sort of continuing my theme of fowl and things for the holidays.
Fowling things for
yes.
The holidays.
And I also bought some sausage that I was going to stuff. I'm going to do sausage stuffing inside there.
Is there going to be celery with that sausage?
Yes.
Stuffing? Oh, my God. Delicious.
And what else did I get? Some mushrooms. I think
fennel? Any fennel going on that?
No, but I should have gotten fennel. I went in there thinking, okay, I'm just going to I'll start off with the meat, and then I'll go from there.
There's probably fennel in the sausage.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a hope for you. Yeah.
Yes, I know.
The sides? You know, we love the sides here.
I know. The sides, I went kind of lame, but I woke up this morning really wanting mashed potatoes. So I'm just going to do my mom's classic, amazing, super buttery. Sorry. Super buttery and delicious mashed potatoes and a salad.
So do you use, heavy cream or just straight milk?
I use creme fraiche, full fat butter, lots of it, probably too much, but it just makes it taste better. And then I put it through a food mill, and then I mash it again. So it gets super creamy.
That's really
smooth.
Great. So you use one of those ricers?
Yeah. Yes.
Food mill, yeah.
But, and a food mill. I use both.
Oh, okay, wow.
Yeah, no, I don't use both. Sorry. It's one or the other. I use a food mill, and then I whip with a hand mixer. And actually, I'm going to put celery root in there, too. Why not?
So is it going to be wine tonight for dinner? What would you have?
Yes, I believe we have some champagne actually left over from the holidays that we'll bust back out. But I'm not totally sure what it is. My husband's been on a Riesling kick, so I'm sure he'll buy
some reason. Well, it's funny. I just got the sign from Jack, our producer, that a winemaker is called in, Mr. Jason Carter from Barrel 27. And he is going to regale me with some stories of what his new rosé is and how maybe it's apropos for Valentine's Day.
Perfect.
So, Jack, can we get Jason in?
Hello.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good.
Hello.
How are you?
Lucy, say hello to Jason.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
I'm hungry now. No, they're pretty good.
Thank you. Let's hope so.
Well, we're having a really lean-to type of show here today. We threw up some a couple of sticks and a brick, and we've got ourselves a tent, and we'd like you to join.
That sounds like a very good welcoming.
Yes. Well, Jason's himself a very talented individual. Where are you living now, Jason?
I am in beautiful, scenic, historic Paso Robles, California.
Nice, nice. And you are one of the founding members of Barrel 27, yes?
Yes, I am.
And how many brands or how many SKUs under the brand Barrel 27 are you making right now?
Oh, gosh. I think we're doing right about 9 wines right now, all Rhone, with the exception of a sparkling wine we do, which is actually Rhone-based.
What are the varietals in that?
It's actually 100% Grenache Noir, but it's done as a Blanc de Noir.
That sounds amazing. Why haven't you showed me that yet?
No, it's last year was the first year, 2011. It's still in bottle. It's actually going to get its dosage in a couple of weeks, and we'll be bottling it this summer.
Well, you crafty man. You've been holding out on me.
Something to look forward to, Ryan.
Unbelievable, as it turns out.
Oh, good. Well, I can't wait to taste it. Well, one of the reasons I call, besides our complete act of desperation, is that, you know, I've read from our copious conversations that you're now going to produce a rosé. And what better drink to have on Valentine's Day than a perfect rosé? So tell me about this project and how it came about.
Absolutely. It's actually the second time we've ever made a rosé. 2005 was the first time we did it, and it was a tremendous, a great response, and we've just never been able to pull it off since because of yields at the vineyard level. And we just got lucky in a very difficult year, 2011. We're actually able to pull off some juice because of the rains. We need to concentrate some. So
it's actually a Cynier.
Yeah, it is actually a Cynier, yeah. A very short skin contact, but we had good color. And it's massive. It reminds me a lot of the 05. And I'm not a rosé fan by any stretch. I think it generally is an atrocity that should not be made. But
oh, my God.
I'm talking about domestic. Sorry.
Oh, domestic. Okay.
Domestic rosé. Is that okay?
That's fine. Because, you know, those are fighting words over here.
I'm saying domestic. French all day long. Spanish, love it. Domestic rosé, I can't stand.
But, okay.
Of all the wines we've ever produced, the 05 rosé in my house, by bottle count, was by far the winner. And the new 2011 spot on, it's just insane. And I love big, meaty rosés. And we have produced yet again a big, meaty rosé.
So what's the alcohol content?
Classified. I will tell you, but I'm going to preface that.
Well, the TTB,
with the same apology I use on all our wines.
The TTB is not listening, let's hope.
Oh, so. No, they know what it is. But we make big wines. We're in Paso. It's hot. To get ripeness, we have to have big sugars. But for us, it's about the balance, not the alcohol. I always think alcohol is kind of a spurious argument because I've had hot, actually, come to think of it, rosés. They were legitimately 11% alcohol, but they were just really out of balance. That right. being said, ours is coming at about 14.5, which wow. is massive for a rosé, but you'd never notice it.
So the viscosity is going to be, or the mouthfeel is going to be wonderful, and hopefully the balance is there, right?
It has great, great, great acidity. It has super high glycerin. So uh-huh. all that, the acid, the alcohol, and the glycerin
so what
all come into balance.
So are we looking at salmon color or darker?
It is actually pretty close to salmon. It's deceptively light on the color. It's not a light rosé. It's not Tempier by any stretch, but it's not super dark. All the local ones you'll see here are, you know, could pass for a red wine in a dark room.
Right.
But this is actually pretty, just real, real salmony. Just a little bit bigger than pink salmon.
So, Lucy, do you think this wine goes with the Cornish game hen?
I think it sounds lovely. And now you're making me thirsty.
You know what? The blend, actually, it's about 60 Syrah, about 30 Grenache, and the rest is more Vedra.
Really? So you're pulling Mourvèdre lots for this, or you realize it needs some of that gaminess?
We like that gaminess. Yeah, so we did that intentionally.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And you, off the back end, you get this wild, kind of charred jungle victim.
Victim.
Yeah, that smells like Vietnam during the war years.
Right, right. I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Exactly. It tastes even better at dinner. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I've had it already, test run it. We just bottled it a couple weeks ago. And I've actually done it so far with a brined chicken that I brined overnight.
Nice.
Using Thomas Keller's brining technique. That was awesome.
Okay.
And then,
I've done that too.
I've also done it with a steak, and it was perfect.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. Wafu steak, which is a Japanese style of pan frying a steak with a little bit of soy sauce and a little bit of mirin, which is sweet cooking sake.
Well, yeah, you're talking to a bunch of foodies, so you don't have to pull any punches here.
I did it like medium rare, medium.
Nice.
And with the rosé, I don't think I could have paired it better with anything.
Well, this is great. So let me tell you, Valentine's Day is probably one of these, I think it's like the other champagne holiday. and I think it's a sparkling holiday, and I would dare to say a rosé sparkling. And so, I mean, maybe I'm just making, maybe this is what I want, so I'm like, you know, I'm forcing it on people. But, yeah. But the idea, though, is that, you know, you're going to drink something, and I think people out to dinner tonight, probably 10% of them will even consider rosé as a Valentine's Day. And maybe just it's a color thing, and I'm really base, and that's just how I roll. But I'm just thinking, like, do you not suspect that this could be, you know, a new trend? We could try to get people to drink rosé on Valentine's Day, or I mean, as a winemaker, you'll take any excuse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. St. Patrick's Day, I don't really care.
Well, green beer, yeah, whatever.
But actually, where we saw our biggest sales, and it was just via explanation to people that would actually be a fantastic pairing that would work, was November through Christmas with the 05. And we just said, you cannot, there's nothing a ham or turkey is going to go better with.
Well, that's a very Spanish argument. In fact, one of my producers, Graham Bazan, they make... arguably the best Albarinos in the world, and they're situated in Rioja Baixas, but they have a sister winery in Valencia, and they make a rosé that they release 2 weeks before Thanksgiving.
Nice.
And they only make, like, you know, maybe 10 pallets of it for the world, and it's gone by January. And so it's essentially their rosé, which is like a Beaujolais Nouveau. It's like an event that they announce it, and they sell it immediately, and everyone takes it. And it's like this cheap and cheerful. It's probably a little darker color than we're discussing right now, but it goes with ham, it goes with turkey, and in Spain, you know, they're having ham all the time. So this rosé is perfect.
Oh, I would say the two, particularly for American palates, the two most underestimated wines out there for food is definitely sparklings and rosés, and people just don't play around enough with those two categories.
So based on our conversation this week also, Jason, I see that you're coming out, well, you're following a trend here, and you're hopping on a bandwagon. Would you like to explain the other wine you're coming out with?
Which one? There's so many.
Oh my God, you're so clever. It's the Moscato, correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah, head over heels.
Right. So Moscato, as listeners of the show will know, we've talked about it ad nauseum, as a sweeter wine that's gaining a lot of traction. And it doesn't have to be sweet, but I think that most of the drinking public assumes that it would be. And in many cases, lower alcohol. So tell us about your Moscato and what that holds for us.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty cool little project off, it's a single vineyard, we don't label it as such, but it comes off a little vineyard in town called Luna Mata, and it's a perfect Syrah site. It's got really chalky soils, it faces the sun, and it grows some of our favorite, of all the vineyards, 12 vineyards we work with, it's always in the top three of our favorite sources from Syrah. The family that owns it has a couple acres of Moscato Gialla, which is rare outside of Asti. It's the same clone that they use in Asti.
Mm-hmm.
And they somehow put it on it just to see what it would do, and they never ripped it out because they like eating it. And they came to us 1 year and said, it's too much to eat, so we need to sell some. And we said, yeah, we'll take a crack at that. Why not? And we've been doing it ever since. It's about our third or fourth year now, making it tiny. Like I said, it's only 2 acres, so we only produce, you know, 150, 200 cases in a good year. But it's about 10 alcohol, so it's very light. It is really high in acidity, and it's grown in heavy, heavy limestone, so you get this really pure, almost Chablis-like chalk off the back end that's insane.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to try it.
Yeah. So far, we've done it, up to now, we've done it as a still wine. And we're going to play around with the technology to make it a sparkling. We're not sure yet. It sells like hotcakes for us, and we're not sure we want to monkey around with it.
Right. Well, if you end up doing something sparkling with it, that would be really interesting for us. But hey, I'm getting a sign from the producer. We got to take a quick break here. Jason, it's been amazing. Thank you so much
for
calling in.
Hey, anytime.
And we'll catch up later this week. I appreciate your time.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Neither.
Well, anyway, welcome back to our 99th show of Unfiltered. It is February 14th, Valentine's Day, and we're live here, Lucy and myself.
Hi, Brian.
At Roberta's here in Bushwick. And we had a great little call with Mr. Jason Carter from Barrel 27, and he basically told us what to drink on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it sounded lovely.
But I, unfortunately, have to do the horrible task of opening something else here in the studio. Oh, my God.
Unfortunately. And we have a little snack, too, which
look
is nice.
Look at the snack fest. There's
Jeez.
Honey here, too.
Oh.
So I have done cheese from Lombardy.
Excellent.
And I bought domestically here in Brooklyn Lambrusca Sparkling Red. Lini 910 is the brand. It's imported by our friends at Domenico Valentino. And it is a sparkling red wine. And it is in one of these cool sort of, you know, quirky things here.
Typical bubbles setup. I've had this. And they also do a white sparkling and a rosé sparkling, the same producer. That's the best sound.
And then we have some Marcona almonds, honey, and big fat raisins. I'm sure those are
yummy.
Anyway, so I'll pour you some.
That's a nice treat.
Jack, would you like a little sippy sip?
Yes.
Of course you would.
That was a yes.
Why would we suspect anything different? So this is a non-vintage. Yeah. And the label's kind of cool. It's Lambrusco Rosso from Emilia, 11% alcohol by volume, and it's an IGT wine. And IGT, for those of you who don't know, is a basically it's wine that's grown in the area that they're talking about in terms of whatever is on the label, but it isn't indigenous in terms of its DOC, DOCG, and
interesting.
It doesn't. It just means that people are now doing whatever they want. They don't follow the rules. And whenever you do something quite unique, you just call it IGT in Italy, and you can sell it.
So what is the, what do you do the same thing in the States? Is it still IGT?
Well, I mean, in the States, there's percentages of wine of what has to be grown in what region.
Right.
And there's also, you know, designated areas or appellations, AVAs, mm-hmm. in California. So to call something, say, Howell Mountain, 85% of the fruit has to come from Howell Mountain, but 15% of the fruit can come from wherever.
Okay.
So there's rules. There has to be rules. Yeah. Otherwise, people inevitably cheat.
It's going to happen anyway.
So let's try this wine. So no real noticeable sweetness.
Not at all.
It's like dry as bone.
Mm-hmm. Have you had this before?
I have not.
Have you had any of theirs before?
I have not. This is exciting for me.
That's very exciting.
Now we have no silverware, so I'm going to take this bread.
You don't need
and smash it into the cheese.
It's more than
I'm going to give you some loose.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. This will make you attractive later.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Oh, you're married. That's right. Me too.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay. Nobody cares. Thank you.
You think this goes with your food tonight?
I'm going to drink everything tonight. No, I'm just
I
kidding.
Can hear you chewing on air. This is really great. So this has got this color on this Lambrusco. It's quite dark, actually. It's almost garnet color. And but there's this really light rim around the wine. Jack.
On it. The bubbles are quite small.
Yeah, there's really no... I mean, once it's poured, it's kind of like flat.
Yeah, you don't really see what's going on.
Do you feel it on the palate? There's still a little bit of frizzante on the palate?
A little, but doesn't hang on.
It's actually quite disappointing.
Yeah.
Well, this was...
What's the price point on
this? This was purchased at Big Tree Bottles around the corner from Roberta's, mm-hmm. and it was $20 of my hard cash, and I will not buy it again. But I think it goes perfect with this cheese and this bread.
Mm. Cheese is delicious. And the Roberta's bread is always good.
Ridiculous.
Not that I know anything, but it did taste better with a bite of the cheese.
See, Jack?
I agree.
We're rubbing off on you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it's a little lackluster. But this same Lambrusco is sold at my local wine shop in Fort Greene, and they also do a rosé and a white sparkling.
What wine shop is that?
Gnarly Vines on Myrtle.
Well, it's funny. I'll give a shout out to Brian Robinson, who's the owner of that shop. And Brian, you haven't bought wine for me in 3 years. And so if you don't buy wine for me soon, I will not talk about you on air ever again.
I'll make sure that he knows that.
Right. Well, it's perfect. Yeah. So yeah, this is an interesting little wine. I'm slightly disappointed because I was really excited for it. I thought we'd try something unique and not go the obvious route for Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. What is your obvious route for Valentine's Day?
I said it would have been champagne, rosé champagne.
So you went because it was a sparkling in the same sort of vein.
It was red and it's like I said, I'm very base. Mm.
So what are you going to drink tonight?
Rosé champagne.
Yeah. And eat what?
To be determined.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether it's going to be a sushi fest or what. I'm not sure yet. We'll see. Maybe a Whole Foods spree. And
it's convenient.
Some sort of cook fest, but... Well, this is very interesting. What do you think overall, if you gave this wine a 1 to 10 rating?
Yeah, I don't know if I need to... It's like a 5. I'd say it's all right.
It's all right.
It's not going to... I don't feel like I'm going to get a headache, but...
No, it's lighter in alcohol.
Yeah, but...
I think if we give this to Carlos, this is the perfect date night for Carlos. And...
He'll be taking half a bottle home with him today. That's not nice.
It'll probably be gone before he leaves. Yeah. He'll finish it here.
this is definitely a Carlos's treat for me.
Because the cheese, it tastes better. It's fine.
With the cheese, it does taste actually perfect.
Yeah.
So, Carlos, your date tonight is a block of brie and this wine.
And half a bottle of Lambrusco.
Yeah. Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard the unfiltered train.
This sounds like a really nice date.
It does. Well, this is all we have today, guys, and I'm really psyched that our 99th show, we got a call in, some average wine, some delicious cheese, and two visits from the producer in the cage.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll sign off.
Thank you so much, Brian, for having me.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.